Salmon and steelhead get most of the headlines when people express concerns about fish populations in our part of the world, but there are other fish in peril, including the Lost River and short-nosed suckers that live in and around Upper Klamath Lake, Oregon's largest body of fresh water by area. A number of challenges face the fish, including low levels of oxygen in the lake. That's the issue taken up by the Oregon Renewable Energy Center at the Oregon Institute of Technology, Oregon Tech, or just OIT. The center recently set up a platform to help put oxygen into the lake, and since the center is about renewable energy, the platform is solar powered. Dr. Mason Terry is the director of the Oregon Renewable Energy Center at OIT and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Mason, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, give an overview, if you would, first. The Oregon Energy Renewable Energy Center does say a lot, but what kinds of projects do you generally get involved with?
We get a lot of student projects, such as a biodigester, where a student is working on dairies, the solar project, the floating solar, pretty much everything renewable energy. It's very applied work that we can get our students involved in.
So pretty much a lot of problem solving that can be solved by renewable energy?
Yes. Trying to come up with new innovative ways to address the energy problems that we have.
So I notice a fair amount of work specifically with batteries at the Renewable Energy Center. Is this the toughest frontier for renewables?
No, I wouldn't say so. It's just one of the frontiers.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like an ongoing thing with renewable energy that part of the issue is how we store the energy as it's made.
Yes, that's becoming much more relevant nowadays. There's a big growth in the world in energy storage.
And is a lot of it battery-based? Are we thinking about more mechanical means, like, for example, the water project in your neck of the woods over there?
Well, there's the pumped hydro. Mm-hmm. There's batteries. And fuel cells have really taken off in the world over the last 4 months.
Okay, we're going to get into that in a detail in just a bit. I'm wandering a little off the main topic here, which, of course, is the Lost River and short-nosed sucker. What are the issues with those fish species?
Well, we've not seen much juvenile recruitment to adulthood during fall time, so over the last 25 years. Now, I'm not a fish biologist. I'm an electron geek, so I don't know the full details or talk much about the fish themselves, but nonetheless, over 25 years, not much recruitment, and they only live about 30 years.
So by juvenile recruitment, you just mean we're not getting a lot of young fish who are able to survive their juvenile phases?
Yes, into adulthood, to where they can actually reproduce.
Okay, so we have a couple of fish that are essentially on the endangered species list, and the issue you're targeting, low oxygen levels in Upper Klamath Lake, what causes that situation?
Specifically, we have two algae blooms, and when they die, one following the other, they sink down to the bottom of the lake, and as they decompose, they consume oxygen, dissolved oxygen in the water. So down at the base of the lake, we have very low oxygen concentrations, and we all need oxygen to survive, even fish.
How low are the levels relative to what the fish generally need?
So typically it's between 8 and 9 milligrams per liter of dissolved oxygen. And we're seeing during this time, during this algae die-off time, we see below 1 milligram per liter.
Okay, yeah, that sounds like it's a problem for breathing, yeah, when you have basically 1/8 or less of the amount of oxygen you generally need.
Yes.
So, Mason Terry, again, is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the director of the Oregon Renewable Energy Center at OIT in Klamath Falls. We're talking about platforms to help out endangered suckerfish in Upper Klamath Lake. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the solution, obviously, is to get more oxygen down there. How did the Renewable Energy Center get into this project?
Basically, Senator Jeff Merkley had a sucker summit about a year ago where he pulled together 30 or 40 of the experts that had been looking at this issue in the lake. Now, there are a multitude of different factors, yet this is one that I thought that we could actually implement and try and affect one of the factors that could be leading to the fish die-off, the juvenile die-off. Now, these are used all over the world, typically in aquaculture, where in Asia, where they're producing fish for consumption, and we decided to implement this pilot project and see if maybe we could get some recruitment.
So the design is not unknown from what you're saying, then, that there's something similar to this or something like an off-the-shelf technology that at least you could take a look at and see about adapting?
Yes. Yeah, typically, this is a shore-based where the aeration pumps and the energy source are on the shore, and we run the tubes into a pond or a lake. Now, Klamath Lake is pretty massive, and our location is about 2 miles out into the lake. Mm-hmm. So it has to be completely off-grid.
Ah, okay. So this is one case where it wasn't entirely like renewables were, you know, just sort of an add-on thing. This is really helpful to them because you need to be able to get power to them without having to run cables.
Yes, exactly. So this is using commercial floating solar floats themselves that we've adapted with the company to fit this certain application with a battery and a couple of modules, charge controller, and an aeration pump.
Okay, there's a couple different parts on there. How much does this thing weigh? How big is it?
The two different islands that we have out there, we call them islands, are each one is 20 by 13 feet. They weigh probably at the most 1,000 pounds with all of each island itself.
All right, so about half a ton each, 20 by 13 feet. Was there any difficulty getting them out to the lake to get them all set up?
No. We put them together over 2 days. The floats themselves went together in about an hour and a half or 2 hours. It was more of the mounting the boxes and making sure all the electronics work. And then it took about an hour to tow them from the Rocky Point boat launch out to our specific location at the mouth of Pelican Bay.
And why Pelican Bay? Why that particular location?
This location is where the biologists have seen a congregation during this time of the juvenile fish. And it's an important place because the waters coming out of Rocky Point are all spring-fed, so they're very cold and fresh and clear. And that's a mixing point where it mixes with the lake proper. So the fish try and stay at this certain temperature that they like. They can grow best and they have the most food, and they have oxygen, basically. So it's a critical location, we believe.
Is there some hope there that having the setup at the mouth of the creek will help distribute the oxygen a bit too?
Yes, we've seen preliminary results sort of see about a 2-acre mixing where we can see some effect out in a 2-acre area of this, just visually. Now, we're currently doing mapping of the dissolved oxygen over this area to understand the effect of basically 4 aeration pumps.
So to be completely low-tech for a second, I mean, is this as simple as injecting oxygen into the water or basically blowing bubbles down there?
Yes, that's exactly what we're doing. We're blowing bubbles down at the bottom of the lake, and they're coming up through.
Pure oxygen or some mix of gases? What have you decided to send down there?
Just air. Uh-huh. Just the same thing we breathe.
So basically very much like what goes on in an aquarium with an aquarium design.
Identically.
So it sounds like a relatively straightforward design, Mason, but it certainly has to weather some elements, outdoors, on water. What were some of the issues in working out the kinks in how this would deploy?
Basically, the floats themselves can handle up a little over 3-foot waves. NREL, National Renewable Energy Lab, last year published a paper looking at icing and overwintering of solar arrays, commercial scale, and they saw no problem other than they had a tremendous snow load on the panel. So they had to move the snow off, and that was a lake up at 7,000 feet, fully iced over, no problem.
Upper Klamath Lake can ice over in the winter, and is the plan to keep them out there through the winter?
Yes. We're going to repeat in-rail study on these smaller rays. This is a pilot project, and this next year we're going to double the size of the system with the future hope that maybe that we can put these systems in multiple locations where we've seen juvenile congregate.
And so, Mason, who did the work? Who did the assembly and the fabrication of the stuff that went onto the two floating islands?
I had five renewable energy engineering students in our undergrad program out there doing all the work as I stood back and just gave them a little bit of bits of advice.
And how did they take to it? This is something fairly exciting, I would think, different from what they're usually doing.
Oh, they loved it. It was amazing. They think it's one of the best experiences they've had in their education at Oregon Tech.
We are talking again with Dr. Mason Terry, the director of the Oregon Renewable Energy Center at OIT, about a couple of, they're man-made islands, human-made islands, let's put it that way, with oxygen injectors to send air down to the bottom of Upper Klamath Lake in an effort to help out the dissolved oxygen levels to make life easier for the endangered Lost River and Shortnose Sucker. Conversation you're welcome to join on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned the Sucker Summit that Senator Jeff Merkley hosted last year, but you're not new to these issues. Are you still on the board of the Modoc Point Irrigation District?
Yes, I am.
So it sounds like oxygen levels is just one part of a larger suite of approaches to helping out Sucker.
Yes. So our soils are naturally heavy in phosphorus, and we get a lot of phosphorus runoff from the spring pump off. When the snow melts, we have to, various farms around have to pump the water off into the lake, and that can take a long, heavier phosphorus concentration than it should.
And does the phosphorus runoff lead to the growth of things like algae? It's a nutrient, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a convoluted problem. It is one of the suspected negative effects on the both of the suckers themselves.
You mentioned earlier that you're an electron geek, but you've had to learn a lot about fish, it sounds like, in your years of having them nearby and having to do some problem solving for them.
I don't know much about fish. Mm-hmm. I know a few different species. I used to fish in high school, but I don't have time to fish now.
Just to put
the farmer and a professor.
Farmer and a professor. So you put the floats in the water, what, 3 weeks ago?
Well, approximately 3 weeks ago, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you have telemetry? Can you monitor from afar, or do you have to go out to them?
Next year we're going to implement a fish tracking system, so we'll be able to tell when the juvenile suckers actually move into the area around the array itself. So that's one of the things we're going to implement next year on the expansion of the pilot project. But no, three times a week, the Klamath Tribe biologists are going out and doing measurements, mapping of the oxygen content and ensuring that the islands are working correctly.
And granted, 3 weeks is not a lot of time to figure out a trend, especially when the weather's been relatively stable. What kinds of measurements are coming in so far? I mean, what kinds of areas have you decided between you and the Klamath Tribal biologists about what to measure?
Well, basically, we're measuring temperature, pH, and dissolved oxygen at different locations out in a circular pattern out from the array itself. Now, an initial measurement that we did right after the algae bloom, the first algae bloom happened, we were seeing, out in the lake proper, we were seeing about less than 2 milligrams per liter of dissolved oxygen down at the base and 8 to 9 at the surface. And that's over about an 8-foot depth. And then near the array, probably about 20 feet away, we did an initial measurement, and that was between 5 and 6 milligrams per liter throughout the water column from the base of the lake up to the surface.
Well, okay, so that's a major improvement then as you head downward compared to what it would be like without the island there.
Yes, but that's just the first measurement.
Understood. Okay. Any particular issues that have shown up in the deployment so far? Anything that didn't work quite like it was supposed to or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I had to run out there and fixed a few connections right after it was deployed. They had not made proper connections. So, but other than that, so far they've worked phenomenally well. Yeah.
And they're on all the time then. I mean, is it relative to sunshine? Do they turn off at night when the sun is not shining, or how does that all work?
No, they run continuously. We've got batteries on there, and the batteries themselves are designed to operate the system for about 32 hours without sunlight.
All righty. And then, you know, not knowing a whole lot about solar cell technology myself, I mean, are they relatively good even on cloudy days? I mean, they're less efficient, I'm sure, but how much?
That really depends on the cloud layer and absorption of the incoming insulation of the, you know, sunlight, basically. So we just had a number of days of very cloudy weather, and yet they're still running.
So, Mason, finally, based on the hypoxic conditions that exist in the lake, on the lake bottom in the heat of summer, I mean, how many more of these islands do you feel would need to be out there? Have you had a chance to work out the numbers with the biologists?
No. This is just a pilot project, really, to look at it. As I said, we're going to put out two more islands next year. And if this proves to be effective, if we can see the recruitment in these locations, less fish die off, more survival, then we will start talking with Fish and Wildlife and really see what we can do, the ideal locations, or if it's going to be a big array, a 30-acre array where we can aerate, or multiple locations around the lake.
Any navigational guides to keep boats away from them, people fishing, that sort of thing?
Yes, we've got buoys out there, and we have some big flags sticking up that say OIT on them.
Okay, that should help people know exactly what's going on out there. What we're talking about are a couple of floating platforms that are powered by solar energy and store energy and storage batteries designed to put dissolved oxygen into the lower depths of Upper Klamath Lake where there isn't much in order to help juvenile Lost River and Short-Nosed Sucker grow up to become adult Lost River and Short-Nosed Sucker and perhaps get them off the endangered species list. The work comes out of the Oregon Renewable Energy Center at Oregon Tech in Klamath Falls, where Dr. Mason Terry is the director. Mason, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you very much.
All right, it's a pleasure.